You're listening to The Point. We continue our conversations with the candidates running for state senator in the Plymouth and Barnstable District. The primary is March 3rd with the special election on March 31st. This is to fill the seat vacated by Vinny DiMacedo, who accepted a job at Bridgewater State University. And today we talk with Democrat Thomas Moakley from West Falmouth. Hi.
Hi, Mindy.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's good. My pleasure. I mean, it's been an ambition of mine for many years to come on NPR, although I'll be honest, it was actually in the context of trying to be on the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me show. Do you ever listen to that?
Of course, yes. Yeah. Well, you never know. You've got plenty of chances, I'm sure.
Live from the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago.
All right, so tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run.
Well, I grew up in Falmouth. I'm an Eagle Scout, a graduate of Georgetown University, and since then I've been putting myself through the evening program at Suffolk Law School. But I jumped into this race, which is a special election coming up in March, because I think the issues that are most important to our community are also disproportionately affecting young people. And that's things like climate change and the opioid epidemic, things that have become tragically personal to so many of us. And I think it's time for my generation to stand up and fight for the future that we want. Yeah. You know, a lot of people express anger for the apathy among young people for getting involved. Well, this is how we're going to get involved.
Now, if elected, I believe you'd be the youngest state senator, and we often hear from younger listeners that we aren't talking enough about the issues that impact them. You mentioned a couple of them. There's student loan debt, affordable housing, economic opportunities are kind of top concerns.
Right.
So let's break those down. Let's talk about student loan debt. Do you have any ideas of, I mean, this is sort of a whole package. You've got these, mm-hmm. We've got young people who we're trying to keep here on the Cape and Islands, young families, and you have the student loan debt, then you have you can't afford to buy the house.
Right.
There's not a lot of rental opportunities, and they're very expensive. And then we've got the job situation. So what are your thoughts on how we keep these young families?
Right. I mean, the cost of living on Cape Cod is just rapidly rising and constantly rising. And it's just like you said, a lot of people just can't afford to live here, even if they're working full time. And I think we should have a community that is embracing these people rather than pushing them out. And so I think a big part of that is affordable housing, making sure that there is that housing stock available for people who are not at the same level of income as a lot of the other people who are living around here. And I think we can do that through tax incentives and also by reworking the 40B laws a little bit on the state level. But I think another big part of that is transportation. We have virtually no public transportation in our area, and that's something that's important not only for workforce mobility, but also for climate change. I think if we were able to invest in a more expensive public transportation infrastructure around here, we'd be able to get a lot done. And I mean, especially when you have something like the new bridges coming in, I see a lot of opportunity there to do a lot of good things. One thing that our area, in particular the Plymouth and Barnstable District, right here in Woods Hole, we have an incredible community of scientific knowledge and, educated people here. And I think through that, we can try to encourage more innovative businesses to come to the district, more kind of higher tech industries. There's a lot of small tech industries that have popped up around Falmouth and Plymouth, and some that have even done, really well, doing something like Hydroid, doing small robotics and things like that. Those are the kind of small businesses I think we should attract to our area. Yeah. But there's infrastructure changes we could do to help those too, like having increased broadband access and stuff like that.
Yeah, but a lot of people would be happy about that, wouldn't they, Brad?
Certainly.
Yeah. Let me go back to a couple of things you said. You said make some changes to 40B. What kind of changes were you thinking?
Well, I don't think that having a blanket approach to affordable housing across the state is really what works. I think we need community-oriented, siting-specific changes that will allow communities to make smart decisions on how we're going to keep these people in our community. Because, people who are working full-time jobs and are raising their families in the district, especially if they grew up here, should be able to stay here. And we want to be looking out for these people. But it's not just young people that are affected by the affordability.
Senior citizens as well, yeah.
Certainly. That's exactly what I was going to say. And, these are people that we don't want to be forcing out. They're part of the fabric of our community. And it's a community I've always loved.
Yeah. You mentioned transportation and increasing public transportation. How would you go about that? I'm just thinking, I know that we've had we've tried some different routes, maybe through Bourne, and they really haven't been that successful, as in not as many people riding. So I think on top of maybe adding to transportation, mm-hmm. you got to get the people to take it, right? So what's your thought on how we would increase public transportation?
Well, I think with the new bridges going in, we should at least consider the possibility of having rail lines over there and bike lanes and bus lanes over the bridges as well. And in addition to that, using the third bridge we already have, the train bridge, which is not really used very much other than the garbage train and the Cape Flyer during the summer, which is incredibly popular. Mm-hmm. Another thing I think we can do is expand the bike lanes around the Upper Cape. You know, there's a really good idea out there right now to expand the Shining Sea bikeway from Falmouth all the way up to the Cape Cod Canal. And I think that's something we should be looking into more seriously as well.
We're talking with Thomas Moakley, Democratic candidate for the Plymouth and Barnstable State Senate seat. 866-999-4626 is our number if you have a question for him. 866-999-4626. Or you can shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So you talked about the bridges, and it looks like we will eventually get new bridges. But what about the economics and design? What are your thoughts on that and your thought on if you would support tolls?
I would not support tolls simply because there's no alternatives for people. You know, there's so many of us who live and work on opposite sides of the bridges, and it would just be unfair to ask even more of them in terms of tolls because there's simply no alternatives. You know, we're stuck, or not, you know, other than the bridges, we're stuck here on the Cape. And the other important thing to realize about the bridge project is that it is a federal project. It's under the purview of the Army Corps of Engineers, but we need to make sure that the local communities, especially Bourne, of course, and the other Upper Cape towns that are surrounding the area, that they have a strong say in how those bridges are going to be constructed and what sort of bridges are going to be constructed in the first place. So we hope that whoever our senator is will be able to work well with the federal government to make sure that the local community concerns are accounted for. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to be starting with the Sagamore Bridge and then moving on to the Bourne Bridge, building them right next to it. But of course, that's going to affect some traffic while they're being built. But overall, I think it's going to be something that creates jobs and a lot of opportunity to improve the infrastructure coming onto the Cape.
You mentioned the opioid crisis. What do you think, what more do you think needs to be done that isn't being done now?
Well, this is, I think, one of my top priorities along with climate change. And it's because, it's something that requires action now. I don't know of anybody here on the Cape who hasn't been personally affected in some way by the opioid epidemic. It's a disease of despair, and there's a lot of things that we can be doing to combat it. There's no magic bullet, single solution, but there's a lot of different things that we can do. You know, we can be cutting down on the trafficking of fentanyl, and Chapter 55 reports that gave us a little bit more information about what is happening with this fentanyl or this opioid epidemic showed that I think before 2015, there was less than half of cases where toxicology reports were performed where fentanyl was found. But then it went up to over 50%, and now we're in the 90% of cases where there's fatal overdoses that have included fentanyl. So that's one piece. Another piece is investing in community health centers, community mental health centers, that is. Because you cut your finger, you know you need to go to the emergency room. If you or a loved one feels like you're in the danger of harming yourself or you're having trouble with addiction, where do you go? A lot of people don't know the answer to that question. And even the people who do might not be able to get care at those facilities because they don't have the right health insurance, or because there's no availability there. So we need to seek parity between mental health and physical health care. And a third thing we can be doing is regulating the sober homes in Massachusetts. I think about 70% of the sober homes around here are not regulated. And so we need to make sure that those facilities are working for the people who are using them.
How do you feel about safe injection sites?
So safe injection sites is something that Canada has been doing for a couple of years, and I haven't been able to find any major incidents where it hasn't been working. Obviously, that's something that needs to be a community conversation. That's definitely something that I'm interested in looking into and learning more about.
You mentioned climate change. So where do you see our efforts in preparing for climate change impacts, in particular sea level rise?
Well, so sea level rise is going on at a rate of, I think, about 1 inch per 10 years. And that's a combination of both the melting of the polar ice caps as well as just thermal expansion of the ocean as it absorbs more of the world's heat. But there's, of course, multiple avenues that we need to take when we're talking about climate change. One is mitigation from the energy standpoint, making sure that we prevent these automatic sunset dates for our solar capacity as a state. Massachusetts currently produces the highest per capita rate of solar energy, and I think we can be doing even more than that. But the other aspect is resiliency. We need to build into our infrastructure resilient capital improvements, and we need to be making sure that we're planning ahead when we're building these things. You know, there's going to be places where we have to have a strategic retreat, just because that's frankly the just the way that it has shaped up.
Let's talk about that strategic retreat for a minute, because you know we all see that reality, and that's gonna be, but that comes down. It's a really tough decision when it comes down to making that happen, because you're going to have some very unhappy people if their road no longer goes to their home, you know, their beachfront home, or their road is washed away, and we decide we're not going to replace that. You would have some angry constituents, I think, that you would have to deal with in that. How would you talk to them about that?
Absolutely, and there's no blanket approach for this either, because climate change impacts different areas in different ways. One of the most significant impacts is going to be the fact that our area is going to be getting warmer and wetter, and that our storms are going to be more intense as time goes on too. So sometimes it makes sense to repair a barrier beach if it's actually serving to protect a more inland community. But sometimes it doesn't make sense to protect a barrier beach if it's merely going to be knocked out by the next storm and that it's not actually serving much of a purpose. So there's no blanket approach. It needs to be based on the science, based on elevating our experts and trusting what they have to say. But we also need to make sure we have community involvement. But I want to make sure that we prevent putting in these massive pieces of infrastructure. You know, you have like these buildings going up in seemingly 2 weeks in the Seaport District of Boston, and then all of a sudden they get flooded the next spring.
Yeah. You know? So thoughts on decommissioning of the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station?
So, I mean, Congress passed the Nuclear Waste Policy Act in 1982, saying that it was going to be the exclusive jurisdiction of the United States government to take care of nuclear waste. And nuclear waste is one of the biggest issues that we have with the decommissioning of the Pilgrim plant. And that's because the state is sort of shackled about what we can do about it, because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the federal government has said this is our job. States are not allowed to do it. They are prohibited by the Constitution. They're preempted about doing anything about it. So one thing that we need to make sure we do is have more local people on the decommissioning committee to make sure that we have people whose voices are being concerned, because currently special interests are outweighing the community interests on the board, so no real change is happening. But the bigger issue going forward, since Exelon has already made the Entergy has already made the decision to close the plant, is the problem of nuclear waste storage. There is no national plan in place right now for nuclear waste storage. So what's happening is that you have these spent fuel rods just building up on site in nuclear power stations across the country. And as that happens, as room runs out in the wet pools, they're being transferred more quickly into dry cask storage, which is the long-term storage units. We need to make sure that the federal government sees this as an issue, but nobody's talking about it.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. We're talking with Thomas Mokley, candidate for the state Senate seat for the Plymouth and Barnstable District. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Lots of small business in the district. What are your plans along the lines of economic development?
Well, that relates directly to what we were talking about earlier about affordable housing and the importance to the workforce about finding a place to live and being able to travel across the district, you know, especially people who are working and living on opposite sides of the bridge. Talking to members of the Chamber of Commerce in the in our local towns, you hear that that's the biggest issue is workforce. They just don't have the people that they need, especially in the summer, to run their businesses. So affordable housing and transportation are directly tied to small business development in this area, and as well as those infrastructure improvements like expanding broadband access and stuff like that.
Yeah. Now, you worked in the offices of Congressman Jim McGovern and State Representative Tim Madden. What do you take away from those experiences that you think would help you if you were to win the Senate seat?
Well, so Rep. Madden, Congressman McGovern, and my great uncle Joe Moakley all shared one thing, and is that they were willing to give up credit to get something done. And I think that's one of the most powerful tools that a legislator has. That's the kind of state senator that I want to be. Not going to be seeking headlines or anything like that. I just want to get done for my community what I think is important for them. So I'm going to be the kind of senator that is happy to take any meeting, take any call, and try to help everyone in my district the best that I can.
Yeah, I mentioned that you would be one of the, you would probably be the youngest state senator, and that has pros and cons, I guess, right? Because I mentioned you probably bring a perspective for the young people's issues that maybe we're not paying as much attention to. But you do have this other experience, as I'm mentioning, working in those offices. But also talk a little bit about, you grew up in a family of volunteer service. So you, even though you haven't been elected office, you do have some experience that you think would help you in this position. Talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. I mean, Falmouth is essentially what made me want to get into public service, because we have such a strong community of volunteerism around here. And I was lucky enough to be raised by parents who made volunteerism a habit in their life. My dad was president of the Chamber of Commerce. He was the Falmouth youth hockey coach. My mom has been involved in the theater. My great-grandmother was Falmouth Citizen of the Year at one point. My grandmother is on the hospital board of trustees and neighborhood Falmouth and things like that, and working with the Boy Scouts and the Boys and Girls State program. And all these experiences that have shown me that the next generation of leaders is going to be one that is willing to give up credit to get something done, that is going to prioritize action over image, and that is willing to try new ideas and admit when something doesn't go right.
How do you feel about a sanctuary state status?
There's a bill in the state legislature right now called the Safe Communities Act, which talks about that a lot. And, you know, I don't think that people in our community that are working and living alongside of us and have never hurt anybody or anything like that should be having to look over their shoulders, because they're a part of our community.
So if you were to be elected, you mentioned a lot of things you would focus on. What would be the absolute top priority? What's the first thing you would want to tackle?
Climate change. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, it sounds dramatic, but it's true that it's an existential issue for my generation.
Yeah, I've got about a minute left, and I'm just thinking this is kind of a tough seat in the fact that you are fundraising now for the primary and special election.
Right.
Then you got to turn around and do it again in November.
It's wild. And I was just looking at the numbers. The Cape Cod Times ran a story last week about the campaign finance data, and it's wild. I mean, this campaign really just started in October, and altogether, the candidates on both sides of the aisle have raised over $200,000. Mm. It's wild. I mean, and while that is emblematic of a system of hundreds of people making a well-intentioned investment in their future, I think it's also symptomatic of a system that forces candidates to overemphasize fundraising. You know, I think we could be learning from other electoral systems that put a cap on expenditures, that put a limit on the range of the campaign, and that give competing candidates equal advertising time.
Yeah. We will have a link to this conversation along with the schedule of when we will be speaking with all of the candidates running for the state Senate seat representing the Plymouth and Barnstable District at our website, capeandislands.org. Thomas Moakley, Democrat from West Falmouth, thanks for coming in and sharing your thoughts with us. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.